Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Close Up Talk Radio, the unique internet broadcast series that brings you together with some of the most amazing, important, and interesting individuals from the worlds of business, industry, travel, art, and entertainment. From company owners, CEOs, and presidents, to the technical wizards behind the scenes who create the magic that make their company's products and services so special. Here is your opportunity to hear firsthand the fascinating stories of how it all happened from those who actually made it possible. This is Close Up Talk Radio. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome back to Close Up Talk Radio. I'm Doug Llewellyn, your host. Nice to have you with us today. And we have a unique opportunity today because we have an award-winning author and an international speaker who is our guest. And I think you're going to find her fascinating. Her story is really, really unique. And I think we will all learn something from her experiences. You may not know this, but in Swahili, the word umoja means to build unity and harmony within families and communities and nations as well as the world. But the journey for umoja can also be an internal journey of discovering just who you are, understanding what your values are, finding your purpose in life, and living with passion to experience peace and satisfaction. And that is what has happened to our guest today. Her name is Colleen Cole. As I pointed out, she is an international speaker. She's a humanitarian. She's the author of several books, including one named Umoja, A Journey from Success to Significance. And this all really began to come together after her husband of more than 30 years died 6 years ago in 2009. That's when Colleen became heavily involved in an organization known as International Needs. It's an Ontario, Canada-based Christian charity that works in some 30 countries around the world. And Colleen's story recounts her very first trip to Africa and her first trip without her husband. On the other side of the planet, separated from everything that was holding her back, she found the beginning of healing from grief and a whole new vision for her future. She traveled 6,000 miles through five African countries in just about a month, 32 days. She and her fellow missionaries provided business counseling and capacity building to help these African communities establish ministries and projects. But what began as an African safari for her soon became a whole journey of transformation. And we're about to hear that story right now. It's rather amazing, and I encourage you to get close to the radio or turn it up, and let's listen to Colleen Cole tell us her story. She lives, by the way, in Porter's Lake, Nova Scotia, which, in case you've ever wondered, they're on Atlantic time. That means they're ahead of Eastern Standard Time. So it's morning there, and I trust it's a beautiful day. Now, I could be wrong on that because there are a lot of areas in the United States, like Boston and other, being snowbound right now. What's it like in Porter's Lake, Nova Scotia this morning, Colleen?
It is a snowy morning this morning in Nova Scotia.
Okay. Well, I guess you're not alone, and we're not alone. It's really hitting a lot of that area of the country and of the continent. Well, listen, let's begin by asking you a little bit of what I really gather from what you've read, that your husband's death really was a big blow to you, and you obviously felt lost there for a while. Is that right?
Oh, yes, that's true. Bill had ALS. And he was completely paralyzed for 17 months and on assisted breathing. He couldn't take a breath without a machine.
Hmm. So going, and you spent a lot of time caring for him.
Yeah, I cared for him at home during that time. And while at home here, I feel that I was actually being trained for what was ahead for me. Because once he was gone, I was alone for the first time in my life. Our three children were grown up and gone and had their own families. I have 11 grandchildren now. And Bill and I had gotten married young. I was 17 and he was 19. So I went from my father's house to my husband's house and had never lived alone before. I'd never even slept in a bed alone before in my life until Bill died.
Wow. Well, that can be a big transition in one's life. But I know you went through a lot after that, and that really caused you to write your first book. You wrote a book not shortly after he died, right? A book called Guilt, The Secret War of Successful Women. What brought you to write that book?
Wow. Okay, well, that book I wrote after I came back from my first trip to Africa. And
oh, yeah.
Because the trip to Africa began began becoming aware of what was happening to me emotionally and what my thinking was doing, where I was stuck in my thinking and not being able to heal and go forward. So I had to confront a lot of things from my past. And the biggest thing that kept coming up, even though I was seeing things as because of grief, it turned out the root was guilt. And it was just the way I'd been programmed as, you know, a child growing up in the 50s and 60s and how little girls were raised. And I just carried a lot of guilt. And I realized after a period of time that most of the choices and decisions that I had made in my life were were based on what would cause me the least amount of guilt. And then I discovered that a lot of women do the very same thing. It's just trying to balance life and keeping your husband happy, your children happy. You need to take care of aging parents, build a career. It's like, what about me? I need to do this for me. And sometimes it's hard to fit it all in. And I would choose and set my schedule based on what was going to cause me the least amount of guilt.
It's interesting the way you put it, the least amount of guilt. Guilt because, and what caused that guilt? Guilt from what? I mean, you were obviously you were catering to your husband, to your children. You had a family business that was doing well. You were involved in that. Where was the guilt? Guilt from what? From not paying attention to yourself, your own needs? Was that it?
All of the above. The thing is what would happen is our business became successful very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And then automatically you have an image to live up to and then an obligation to continue growing the business and to be there, you know, for all of your employees, for your franchisees, because we started out as a construction company. Then we began manufacturing our own products. Then we began offering the business opportunity through franchising. So we had three shifts and three different companies to manage and grow, and they each had their own personality and their own specific role, or I had my own role in each company. They were all very different. So even juggling the business aspect of it, our children were all growing up and involved, and quite often Bill and I had to travel for business. I felt guilty about leaving my children home, leaving them behind with a babysitter or with my mother, and she came and stayed with them a lot. So for me, the mommy guilt is where it really began in my adult life. And sometimes I think, you know, is the sacrifice worth it to be away from my children? I look back now and I see that I did make the right choices. But when I was going through it, I didn't necessarily know that. I just felt overwhelmed. And I know that a lot of women feel the very same way. They just get overwhelmed with feeling obligation to so many people and so many things. And I had just had to learn to stop and think about what are the priorities, what's important, what can I delegate, all these things that we learn actually in business, but I had to apply it in every aspect of my life because, honestly, I'm very passionate about my business and about my family and about all the other activities that I'm involved with. So managing them all and having them all as you know, a vibrant part of my life is what I wanted, and why not? But it was just balancing it, and I've learned how to overcome those obstacles.
Well, let's get to the subject of Africa. You said you wrote this the first book after that first trip to Africa. You've now written a follow-up book to that, another book. What caused you, or what prompted you to visit Africa in the first place? You went first alone. You hadn't been there with your husband, is that right?
Well, that's correct. We had always dreamed about going to Africa, and that was definitely on our bucket list. And we were in the process of transitioning our business over to our oldest son, and with the goal of retiring at 55, you know, the whole Freedom 55 thing. And we bought a motorhome, had it a trailer designed for our car and our two motorcycles, and we were going to travel North America, South America, doing missions work, visiting our franchisees, and having an adventure with life. And our goal was to eventually go to Africa and work our way around the world. And I thought when Bill died, all that died with him. I didn't see me as a single woman ever being able to go and travel to those distant countries. Until I met David Marshall, who's the executive director for International Needs Canada, was at a conference, and I met him there, and he told me about this trip that they were, he was leading a group to Africa. And I was intrigued, and I knew before I left, and we talked for 2 hours that day, I knew before I left I was going to sign up. I didn't tell him that. But I knew in my heart that that was something that I needed to do for me. And you know what? I felt actually guilty that I was making a decision and choice all about me. But it was actually one of the most freeing and liberating choices I've ever made in my life, because it completely changed my thinking and my direction. Not necessarily my direction. Not necessarily my direction, but my vision and what I really wanted to devote the rest of my life to.
Well, tell us how that happened. What happened in Africa that caused this enlightenment in your life?
Well, there were several things. And, you know, the meaning of the word emoja, I thought I was going with a team of people to help change other people's lives. I didn't realize how much change would happen within my own soul and within my own journey. So I was seeking now that I look back, but I didn't realize it at the time. But what happened to me, and I say I had to go to the other side of the planet, away from everybody and everything that was influencing me, so that I could see things clearly and make my own choices for myself. Because a lot of people are saying, oh, Colleen, sell the house and buy a condo. You know, or you need a dog, you shouldn't live alone, all these things. You know, retire and stay home and play with your grandchildren, just have fun. Why are you wanting to travel? So all these things, I just didn't feel in my heart that that's what I wanted to do with the rest of my life. At that time, I was around 55 years old. It's like, I have a lot of things I still want to do. How am I going to do them? And I didn't want to spend the rest of my life being sad. And I felt that people were actually keeping me bogged down in grief. And because everybody would say to me, oh, Bill would be happy about this, or Bill would like that. It was Bill, Bill, Bill. And it's like, what about Colleen? What about me? I'm still here. He's gone. And I had a hard time separating from the past. But this trip to Africa, I actually was able to, for the first time in my life, discover who Colleen really is. Because while I was there, I began to understand that we get programmed, and I was still ordering pizza with no onion and green pepper, and that's only because Bill didn't like onion and green pepper. I like onion and green pepper, so why not? But you see, you get stuck in familiar things, in tradition, and that's where I was. But this trip to Africa, being alone and being with people that I had to build trust with. Now, I was the only woman with 9 men, plus a mechanic and a guide. So I was with 11 men for 32 days and the only woman. But being in construction and being a country girl, I'm used to it. And for me, that time was like ATVing in the backcountry here where I live, you know. It was rough, you know, and sometimes dirty and dusty or muddy. We went from one extreme to the other. But through all that, it taught me what I'm made of. It actually showed me who I am. And when we would pull into some of these sites, and my heart was broken at what I saw and smelt and felt and heard, but it was those things that actually stirred up what was in me that I didn't realize was a strength or an asset or something that could help empower somebody else. I didn't know the hidden treasure that was within me, and that was actually mined out and revealed while I was in Africa.
Well, that's interesting. What did you see in Africa that was such an awakening for you? And where did you go, by the way? I'm sure everybody's going to where you went in Africa.
Well, what we did is the purpose of the journey actually. International Needs, you know, they're in the business of transforming lives, changing communities through education and health projects. And we partner with people on the ground, organizations in various countries around the world, you know, who we sign a bilateral agreement with, and, you know, we fund projects. We raise money and fund projects. So there is a lot of accountability. But one of the things that I found is when we would pull into a site, and the very first place I went to was in Kenya. And in Kenya, the largest slum in the continent of Africa is just outside the city of Nairobi. And I'd been in a lot of slums before in my life, but not anything like what I experienced there. And I had just arrived in Africa that day, and that was the very first place we went to. So it was such a rude awakening for me that it shook me. It rattled me and shook me right from the very first day. And that was the beginning of the stretching that I would confront on a daily basis, whether we were in good situations or tough situations, because even in the good situations, I learned a lot about myself and what was ahead. But part of the reason we were there is because a lot of people will donate money to a church, a hospital, to build a building because it's a legacy item. But one of the challenges in many of these developing nations is transportation. The road systems, the infrastructure is so poor. To get to the people that really need help or to get ambulances or anything like that, you need a reliable vehicle. So David Marshall came up with this idea, is like, hey, let's fundraise. Let's buy some Land Rovers. We shipped them into Mombasa, Kenya on the Indian Ocean. So we flew in and picked the vehicles up there and drove them all across five countries and left them in Zambia and in Democratic Republic of Congo. And because people don't want to put money into, who wants to buy a vehicle? There's not an emotional attachment to that, but that's one of the biggest needs. So this was a creative way to get the vehicles to the people who needed them. Plus, it was a creative way for adventurous, entrepreneurial people like me and the other people in the group to be able to go, have an adventure, and actually meet the needs that quite often go unmet. So when we pulled up in these Land Rovers, it was an epic journey, because we traveled all through Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania, Zambia, and into Democratic Republic of Congo. And through that, we saw spectacular scenery. We did safaris. We did whitewater rafting in Uganda. That was an amazing thing. I did a hot air balloon ride over Serengeti National Park. I never would have done that had Bill been with me, because he was afraid of heights, and he wouldn't have gone, and he wouldn't have wanted me to go either. So for me, I was spreading my wings and actually having experiences that I would not have had opportunity to do otherwise.
Yeah. That's great.
For me, there were so many things that were new and exciting and changes, the good, the bad, and the ugly, they were all there. But it was all a holistic package, actually, for me, because they all built towards the end. When I stepped off that airplane to come home, actually 3 years ago yesterday, I got off that airplane a completely different woman than when I had gotten on. And I haven't looked back now. When I look at the last 3 years of my life, the changes that have happened to me have been so amazing. And those men that were our teammates and drove through all those countries, we spent a lot of time together. So there were a lot of business deals. They were all entrepreneurs or professionals. You know, one was a doctor and a nurse and an accountant, and the rest of us were all self-employed, all very like-minded. And the whole idea is we all had the attitude is, you know, you can't keep throwing money at projects and expecting it to help. Look at the trillions of dollars that have gone into places like Africa in the last 50 years. So you can throw money at something, but unless you affect sustainable change, then it's worthless and useless. And I work hard for my money, and I'm sure you do too. So if I give money, donate money to a project, I want that to have an impact on the lives it's meant to have. And part of the focus of the Emoja journey was for us as Canadians to go over and pour out our expertise, to mine out what are the gems in all of these locations. It's asset-based. is let's find the people. And it's amazing, like the executive directors and the people who work in international needs in all those countries, right from to the school teachers. And they're amazing people with such drive and such passion. Once I was there and started building relationship with them in the Umoja, I could see their passion. Their passion is what fueled mine. Is because I know if I can help fill their toolbox and give them the entrepreneurial skills that I have to help take their work or their project to the next level, then that was such an empowering thing for me. And that their passion spilled over onto me. And through that passion actually created the power to make a sustainable project and get everything in place. And now looking back 3 years, a lot of things have changed. I've been back 3 times since.
Wow. Give me an idea of what you may have done for one specific incident where you met some people over there and then you were starting to help them. What kind of things did you do to help them with?
Oh, okay. Well, my focus is with women and children. And the biggest thing for me is empowering a woman by teaching her a skill so that she can support herself and her family. And by setting initiatives in place and projects in place where women are rescued from the sex trade or rescued from conditions, you know, that are just oppressive, and teach them a trade, get them into a hospice if they need to be for healing, get them into a hospital, because many women have been brutally raped. I just saw so many things, in particular in Congo. That was our last country, and I'm glad it was last.
I was going to ask you, did you teach some of these women a trade to give them the beginning of getting going on having a trade?
Well, I don't personally, but the international needs through their programs. They have hospices, they have training centers. They put wells in communities. There's skills training and support for women through clinics. And so it's just empowering those and structuring those and setting those up. And
but that's what you were doing, though, right? You were actually doing that, helping them. That's what I was asking you. What kind of trades were you trying to teach somebody? Did you have luck in doing that?
Oh, yes. Many women. So some of the trades are dressmaking, hairdressing, things like that. And
you were helping teaching them those trades? Is that what you were doing?
No. What I did is more like a business coach with the leaders.
Okay. All right. I'm trying to get a grasp of exactly what you physically yourself did to help them. That's why I'm asking.
Oh, okay. Well, we spent time with the leadership, empowering the leadership, and pouring our business skills and coaching skills into them so that it's a trickle-down effect to the people that they deal with directly. So most of my work is all at leadership level, but it's all about building the projects and sustaining, like, the schools and the clinics.
Okay, now I'm getting the picture of it. Well, let me ask you a question. Obviously, this made a huge impact on your life. You say you're a totally different woman now as a result of your trip there, your trips, because you've made multiple trips. How are you different?
Wow. I'm different in that my whole perspective has changed. And my perspective in a way that material things are important. And, you know, it's nice to have things to enjoy in your life. But I think the beginning was losing my husband and realizing that the important things are the people and building legacy. And when I was in Africa, all I could think of, it's only by the grace of God that that's not me, because I ran into women who had experienced very tragic and similar things in their lives. And just looking at what I can give and what I can do, and understanding the power that I have within me to make change in the world. And it's only because my eyes were open to things I hadn't seen before. Once my eyes became open to what the needs were and how easy it is for me to affect change. And I think it now, I'm 57 years old, what I've experienced in my life, I can pour that into other people. And I think that's the biggest legacy I can leave behind, is to travel the world and coaching people, encouraging people, inspiring people, and being a voice for those who have no voice. And I've changed my thinking on how, you know, how charities run. You just can't keep throwing money at things. You have to change people's mindsets. And that's what the
you've learned a lot.
The Emoja Journey.
I want to ask you about. I want to interrupt you a moment to ask you about the book you wrote on this called Emoja, A Journey from Success to Significance. What's that about?
Well, it's a book about that journey, and it's a fun book. It includes all the adventure of everything we did and, you know, just the majesty and the spectacular scenery in Africa and everything. But it also, the relationships with the people on our team that have changed my life, and I've still maintained close relationships with all of those men. And more importantly, the relationships with the people that I built at every one of those places. And that's what drives me. Some of those women and children, their faces haunt me. And haunt me in a good way, because that's what fuels me and fuels the passion to what can I do for them? How can I change their lives? If I can speak to somebody, or if I can connect this with that, if it's going to make a change in that community, it will make a change in that family. And the whole idea of this new book is to inspire people to join our Emoja journey. We are launching a journey now across 6 continents, and it's to raise $1 million for these projects that so badly need funding. If there's going to be sustainable change in these nations, there has to be programs in place to change mindsets, to eradicate the oppression and injustice, and to empower women who will elevate themselves out of poverty if they're given the right tools. And the key to that is education.
Well, you know,
so
this
journey
this
that we're launching, we're launching a journey across Canada and the United States to raise support for these projects. Then I want to take my Land Rover and drive it. We're driving it through Latin America in April and May. We're going to India, Nepal, and Bangladesh in September. We're going to Africa from Cape Town to Congo in January, and that is, we're duplicating that original Emoja journey, because you know what? All 10 of us who went on that journey are now totally engaged in these projects. If we can duplicate us with more journeys, is like, you know what? Come and join the journey. Let's go. If you are, you know, a successful entrepreneur, we need your brain. We need your mind. We need your expertise.
Listen, we're almost out of time. I want to find out how people can get in touch with you or learn about this. And if they're interested, get involved. How do they do that?
Okay, we have a website. It's called www.emojajourney.com. They can click on the website and subscribe there. My website is ColleenHCole.com. Or they can go to internationalneeds.ca, and there is information on that website there as well.
All right, but the other one, the first one you mentioned was Emoja. What was that website again?
It's umojajourney.com.
Umoja, emojajourney.com.
Correct.
Colleen, this has been fascinating. Thank you so much. I'm sure our listeners have been spellbound by a lot of your story. Again, our guest, Colleen Cole. She's from Nova Scotia, actually Porter's Lake, Nova Scotia. And what a story she has to tell. She's an author. You can find, are your books available, like on Amazon or something like that?
Yes, they are.
Okay. Look up Colleen Cole on Amazon, and you can find her books. Colleen, we're out of time. Thank you for being with us. This is very enlightening indeed. All righty. Thank you so much, my dear.
Pleasure.
That's it for now. I'm Doug Llewellyn. We're out of time. Have a great day, everybody. See you next time. Bye for now.